Thanks for that, and welcome back to the show. Rick Tittle with you, coast to coast and around the world on the American Forces Radio Network. And Tuesdays at 9:40, we hear little Christopher Cross sailing because we talk with our friends at SailSportTalk.com. And as per usual, our friend Karen Lyle co-hosting this next segment with me. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing fantastic, Rick. You know, I spent this last week in Monterey doing scuba diving certification for open water scuba diving. And when I was down there, one of the beaches that oftentimes the divers go from was actually filled with hundreds of sea lions. And I met this really cool naturalist who is waiting to come onto our show to talk to us about the sea lions. And so I'm really happy to introduce him to you. Rick, this is Milos Radakovich, and I really think that you will enjoy talking to him.
All right, well, let me give him a double introduction. This is Milos Radakovich. He is a coastal naturalist. Milos, welcome to the show. What is a coastal naturalist?
Oh, it's just something I made up. the Supreme Commander was taken, so I thought, oh, I'll just go with the next. Well, it's just naturalist. Unfortunately, it's kind of a ill-defined or loosely defined thing, but it's basically someone who studies and interprets nature. And people bring their own particular interests, whether it's birds or mammals or plants or whatnot. And I'm just all over the map. I've lived on the coast all my life, from San Francisco, then down here to the Monterey area to graduate work at the Moss Landing Marine Lab. My specialty was marine mammals, but along the way, I also developed interest in coastal geology, the local kelp forests and invertebrates, and so up fish. I'm just kind of all over the map. So I am a true coastal geologist. I know a little bit about interior stuff, deserts and whatnot, but primarily my specialty is coastal work from Mexico up to Alaska.
Milos, this was an amazing experience for me to hear and see all of these sea lions. And I was there with my diving buddy, John Griffiths, and we were watching the sea lions because this was going to be one of the beaches that we would have dived from if the migration hadn't come in. And we knew nothing about what the behavior of these sea lions was. But you were on your bike and volunteering for NOAA, I believe, and we came over and asked you questions. Can you tell our audience about the sea lions and this migration that we have on the California coast?
Sure. And in fact, that is the beach where I received my ocean certification as a scuba diver back in 1967.
Wow.
It was new. I mean, we just got water. Water was just recently invented, and it was the old days. So I know the frustration that you must have felt, like, oh, we were supposed to do it on this beach, but it's completely upholstered with sea lions. And this is part of their annual migration. Most of the colonies down in Southern California, out on the Channel Islands, San Miguel, Santa Cruz, Santa Rosa, San Nicolas, and a few coastal colonies down into Mexico. Those are the breeding colonies. That's where the women are. breeding season typically is June, July, something like that. The pups are born usually in April, May, sometimes into June. And the pups stay with mom for about a year. And then when it's breeding season, the males, who range as far north as British Columbia, these are California sea lions, north of Vancouver, we also have the bigger Steller's sea lion, named for German naturalist Georg Steller. And so there's some overlap in the range. Sometimes we'll get Stellers. down to the Farallones and into Washington, but primarily they're the northern population. The California sea lions range from Mexico up to British Columbia, like you said. So in usually around April, the males head south because it's time to make more sea lions, and that's where the women are. And they kick out the young ones, the yearlings, and they come up here. We get a big flood of young animals. And then in July, August, the males come back up. And like I said, they're on their way north. So they stop off wherever there's food. And right now, there is a ton of food out there, anchovies and krill, lots of stuff. The whales are out here. We got humpback whales. We have blue whales. One of the largest congregations of blue whales anywhere on the planet is right off Monterey Coast. So it's crazy time. It's crazy time.
So help me out with this. You're saying that the migration tendencies, the males will separate from the females and then they got to go back and find them?
Yeah, they don't make families. This is a typical situation for the pinnipeds, the seals and sea lions, that they will have a harem of sorts. And so the males will command a certain section of beach, which they're depending on their size and age, and basically their attitude. They will command 30, 40, 50, 60 females, maybe more, and they will protect that area of beach. They will protect the females from younger males who want to have their way with them. But then he will eventually end up having to service all those females. So it's a tough job. They may have to spend 2, 3 weeks on the beach without having to go, without being able to go back into the ocean to feed, because then that will expose his women to other males. So he's got to stay there and guard the beach. So then when they leave, the women and children stay in Southern California. So they don't necessarily come back and find the same women. They just, depending on, again, on their size and resilience, which is why they only have a short reproductive window. They may live to be 20 years old, but their reproductive window is only maybe 2, 3, 4 years in that early teens period. Until they get to be about 10 or 12, they're not big enough. They don't have the stamina to or the strength to hold off slightly older, stronger males. After 14, 15, they don't have the stamina to hold off the younger males. So they have this brief reproductive window. So in any 1 year, maybe 90% of the reproduction happens from only maybe 10% of the males. Some of the other males get in there too, which is helps to mix up the gene pool. But it's a real interesting situation. We see that with elephant seals. We see that with deer and other animals where it's not a one-to-one relationships. They don't mate for life. They, none of that. They just it's a harem kind of situation.
We just got a
Well,
call that you were canceled because you called female seals women. Just thought we can move on. Go ahead, Karen.
Rick, can we hear just 15 seconds of sea lion voices that I recorded when I was down there?
Sorry, I had a bad breakfast. All right, Dominic, play that bit, will you?
No,
No, that
he
was
did.
it. Yeah.
He just did.
Okay.
But I
That
can
was
do
not you,
it.
Rick. I know. I know. I recorded that thing. That was you.
That was me.
That was Milos. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm multilingual. I
Oh,
was.
you are. That was you, Milos. Oh, great, great. Well, what fascinated me before I talked to you, John and I are sitting there, we're trying to figure out what's happening and who we're watching, and because all these sea lions are like pushing against each other and barking at each other and stuff like that. And I had no idea that they were all males. you know, just contesting with each other. It was quite amazing to me.
It's practice for what they're going to need to do when they get on the breeding grounds. And somebody said they're like the kids in the back seat of the family car on vacation. And you can't keep them apart, but they're always at each other. You know, Ma, he's looking at me. He's touching me. He's looking out my window. He's got my squid. Ma, do something. You know, and it's just that constant sibling stuff.
I was wondering, you know, when I see them, like, they climb all over it, just kind of like a mosh pit in some ways. You know, you've got one snail that decides it wants to go to a position, and it just surfs across the bodies of the other sea lions. And you know, if somebody is bigger and stronger and doesn't like it, they'll bark them back. And someone else might say, oh, yeah, right there. That feels good.
Right? Exactly. And all the ones from the bottom want to climb up on top. And well, their nearest land relatives are wolves and dogs. So it's not surprising that they exhibit kind of a pack behavior, and the same kind of pack dynamics you see with wolves and with dogs, where there's a pecking order. And one of the ways they establish that is with this kind of bravado and wrestling, pushing, shoving. They show their teeth, but they rarely use them. So they're loud, they're pushy, they're guys. They're just young guys, teenagers.
Last question for you. We just have about a minute, but if a person went down there and got super close, how much carnage and frenzy and limbs and blood would it be?
Well, no, for the most part, they scatter because this is something different, something new. But I also warn people that most of those guys are young males. They're frustrated. They're horny. They haven't had much luck down on the breeding grounds. And then you show up down there, and there have been instances where people have been chased and run down and mounted. So you do not want to be on CNN with that kind of image, and I'm sorry to have put that image in your mind on the air, but it does happen. So don't mess with them. Maybe keep your distance, and everybody will be better off.
Well, now I know why they call them humpbacks. We have been speaking with Miloš Radakovic, coastal naturalist. Hey, good stuff. You're pretty good on the air, Miloš.
Thank you very much.
And Karen Lyle, always good talking to you.
It's great talking to you, Rick, and just love to bring my adventures back to all of our listeners and to my good friend, Rick Tittle.
The website is sailsportstalk.com. We will come on back on Sports Byline USA.